I'm Ringo and I play the drums.
Well, I'm Paul and I play the bass.
I'm George and I play a guitar.
I'm John and I too play a guitar. Sometimes I play the fool.
Do you ever get tired of being Beatles?
Sometimes
I get a bit lonely now.
Rhythm blues, that boom.
No, I don't think so, really.
You don't ever think that.
Just occasionally you get cheesed off with people writing rubbish about you, which you get often.
Yeah. I agree with that. I've had a divorce and half a dozen kids.
Now, what do you... well, I mean, isn't this a big sort of drag to go around explaining to your wife that you're not divorced and all that?
No, she knows I'm not divorced because I keep seeing her every day, see?
Yeah, there's a point. But what about the simpler things of life, like...
like riding on a bus.
Yeah, or going to just about any restaurant you
can. Well, you miss those sort of things.
We go to certain ones.
And we go to ones where the people there are so snobby, they're the type who pretend they don't know us.
Back to PMPnetwork.com. With us right now is a legend in the music business. Sid Bernstein was the man who brought the Beatles to America. He has chronicled it in a book called Not Just the Beatles, which is available at Bloomingdale's and many other places. We'll tell you about that a little later on in the program. And Sid Bernstein himself joins us. Sid, I was fascinated by the book.
Thank you so much. I've heard this from my children, from my wife, from a lot of close friends. It's nice to hear it from someone 200 miles away. You are about 200 miles from New York, right, Marty?
Yeah.
So I'm picking up momentum and geography.
I'll tell you one of the things.
Thank you so much.
One of the things that fascinated me in the book was the discussion of your Woodstock Bethel situation in 1994. Going through all the permits, getting all that stuff done, then having someone else pull the wool out of your eyes and do another alternative festival somewhere else because they own the Woodstock name. The whole deal is just an amazing story. But you did pull off a beautiful festival at Yaskes Farm with some of the best names in rock, and you were able to do that despite all these things, with absolutely nothing negative happening at the festival, where Woodstock 99 and all these other ones have had all kinds of problems associated with them.
The problems were tremendous. Without the other group, who actually were the ones who originally did it on the very original site that I was on in 94, meaning the Max Yasger Farm in Bethel, New York. And that's the reason I called the festival I was producing Bethel 94.
And we were talking about a little bit about Bethel 94 a moment ago, and I wanted to get back to that. We just had a little bit of a problem with the phone lines here. You were able to secure Matt Yazga's farm, but you didn't really have the money at the last minute. The insurance company pulled out, and yet people from all over just came over and volunteered their help for you.
Well, that's an interesting story. I don't know if I told it in its entirety in my book. There was this famous disc jockey up out of Poughkeepsie whose name was Bob Wolfert. They called him the Wolfman up there. And he called me at my hotel one morning. He'd done several interviews with me and the campaign, that long campaign, those years it took me to get the town to okay my proposal. He'd interviewed me a couple of times, and we'd gotten kind of friendly. He called me on the morning at 7 a.m. at the Concord Hotel, where I was based. It had become my operations headquarters for my staff and myself. Concord was nice enough to give us 10 rooms and phones, etc., etc. It was the morning of the first of the 3 days that the concert was scheduled for, the festival was scheduled for. At 7 a.m. he called me. I was up looking at the skies wondering what the weather was going to be like that night, and not knowing how I was going to do it when the insurance company pulled out with their letter of credit and all that stuff. And Bob had me on the air just as you have me on. You've got me on the air. How do we explain who I'm addressing besides you, Mark?
Well, you're addressing everybody in the world right now.
Oh, okay. Well, obviously this is a tri-state, four-state area. And he says, Sid, what are you about to do? Are you ready to go tonight? I said, I don't have lights. I don't have a stage. I don't have a generator. I don't have equipment. And he said, what do you need? I said, I need electricians. I need power. I need carpenters to build a stage. And this DJ enjoyed a wide reputation and his station covered quite, I think it was WPDH, which is one of the powerhouse stations in the Northeast. And calls started to come in to his office. He says, Sid, where can people reach you who really want to talk to you? They've got stuff, equipment to bring to you. So I gave him the number of my room. They set me up with my own number so it didn't interfere too much with the Concord switchboard. Concord is a major hotel.
Mm-hmm. I've been there.
In New York State was. It's no longer in operation, unfortunately.
Mm.
It's one of the great resorts of the Catskills. And the phones started to ring with volunteers. Hey, I've got a generator, Sid. Hey, I got nails, I got boards. Can I come down and help? And this is about 7 till about 8:15, 8:30 in the morning. We just about had everything we needed in terms of supplies now. I have 6 children. My 4 sons and their friends were already organizing a crew for the stage, for the lighting, the electricity. And that night we were ready to roll at 9 p.m., an hour after scheduled beginning of the concert. We were ready to roll. Our first musicians got on stage, and it's estimated that over 100,000 people showed up. Although the concert was scheduled for 3 days, the summer of 94, we ran for 6 days. People were coming from the other festival 50 miles away and saying, this is the real spirit of Woodstock, and we're enjoying the attitude, the environment, and it was the original site.
Yeah.
It was the Max Yasker Farm.
But you know something? I think the attitude you're talking about is really the difference, because the new, quote-unquote, Woodstock was charging premiums for everything, you know, charging $5 for water, and they were really ripping off people.
I'll tell you, I don't really want to comment on that. The guys who did the original event, who were doing it 50 miles from us at another location, I forgot what the little town was that they took over. I can't remember. It started with an S. It was a little town not far from the town of Woodstock, where it never happened, even in 69.
Saugerties.
Pardon?
Saugerties.
Saugerties, right.
Yeah.
Which was about 50 miles from Bethel, the original site where I was operating from.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't want to put them down. But I must say that the comments were from people who'd driven 50 miles to come look at what was going on at our event, was saying this is the real spirit of Woodstock. My slogans, I had signs put up about civility and about planting trees, and I guess this was unusual for a concert to carry the message, or they wouldn't have made such comments. This is the real spirit. This is what it should be like, and we were a huge success, in, Mark, in terms of reaction, in terms of people sort of being rewarded for their efforts coming up. And we also had what the original Woodstock had, rainy skies. People were sliding down the hills, but in a very, very orderly, peaceful way. We had terrible weather for one of the three major days, the three opening days. People had set up tents. Some had brought their own equipment, bedding and cots, etc. And it ran without an incident. So I look back at it as a pyrrhic victory. We didn't make any money, but that wasn't all important to me. It was to do the event and do it well. And I'd spent 5 years, mind you. I dug in there, and my kids were up at camp in the town of Bethel, coincidentally, when one of the camp directors asked me, "Were you at the original Woodstock site up here?" I said, "No, my wife was pregnant. I couldn't come up. All my friends did," and still talk about it 20 years later. Now, this is 19... let's see, I'm a little foggy. I want to repeat to you, I'm a little under the weather.
Actually, I'd like to actually change the subject a little bit because we really talked about that quite a bit. But the book is called Not Just the Beatles, and I'm a huge fan of the Rascals. I know that was your band. You actually were representing them and pushed them. And Felix Cavalieri is one of the most talented individuals in the world. While you were doing the Rascals and promoting the Rascals, just as Good Lovin' became a huge hit, that was when you heard that Brian Epstein was going to bring the Beatles to America, right?
It was while I was working with the Rascals that I got the idea that I wanted to bring this new group out of Britain that I'd been reading about. I hadn't heard their music, Mark. I'd been reading about them in English newspapers.
Right. So you actually called Brian Epstein directly?
I called him at his home.
Right.
He hadn't yet set up in London. His mother answered the phone. Queenie Epstein finally put him on the phone after she asked me about New York. A number of questions about New York. She hadn't been there a number of years.
Uh-huh.
And finally I heard Brian's footsteps, which I later learned were coming from his. They lived in a lovely Tudor house in Liverpool, very British-style house, when I later visited Mrs. Epstein and her other son, Clive Epstein, Brian's older brother, who became one of my closest friends. And he got on the phone, and I sold him on the idea of coming to New York. And when he heard I wanted to present the band at Carnegie Hall, he said, "Oh, I would love to play that hall." But he says, "We have no airplane in America yet, Mr. Bernstein. Why would you want to do it?" And I simply said, prophetically, I guess, "You will have airplay." I still hadn't heard a note of his music, but I'd been reading such wonderful reports as they climbed the mountain in Great Britain when they went from their little club, the Cavern, in Liverpool to play all the music halls, which were the venues then in England. The old vaudeville houses were called music halls. I asked him what he was getting per night. I said, "I will offer you..." I came up with a figure about twice what they were getting a night at the music halls, which were approximately 1,500, 1,800 seaters throughout England. He says, "I won't give you the date immediately. Let's talk about the date a year from now." I had read so much about them, was so carried away with what I read and the excitement they were creating in their native England. I said, "Yeah, let's do it." I wanted to do it 3 months from the date we were talking, when we first talked, which was February or March of 1963.
So we set a date for February 12th, 1964, Lincoln's birthday at Carnegie Hall. And that became history because the records did start to play. It took about 8 months after I made the date to wait for the first record to break here. And the tickets, which were gathering dust at the Carnegie Hall box office, disappeared. I learned from the box office treasurer. Disappeared in about 30 minutes. We had two performances, afternoon and early evening. And the people at Carnegie said they'd never witnessed a phenomenon in all our experience like this one. They said people had lined up the night before with blankets and comforters, and parents with their cars parked around Carnegie Hall for their kids to warm up. They said they never experienced anything like that. But that's what the Beatles are capable of doing. Witness what they're still doing today. Still so much of the news.
Yeah, well,
35, yeah. Some 35 years later.
Did you also bring the Rolling Stones to Carnegie Hall as well?
Yeah, I brought. Again, reading these English newspapers, I recognized that the next big group in England was the Rolling Stones, and I contacted their manager, who said, "I was hoping I might hear from you." Their manager was also their producer at that time, Andrew Luke Oldham, who's in the history books. He says, "We'd love to play New York for you." He says, "We read what you were doing with the Beatles and with a second big group in England, and we'd love to come over." Hmm. So it was easy to make a date with him. And once the Beatles record started to play, the Rolling Stones started to play, the whole British invasion got on the air.
Sure.
English music became the thing, and not in the exact order, but after the Beatles, of course, came the Rolling Stones. After the Stones came, I think I did the Dave Clark Five, and then Herman's Hermits, and then Manfred Mann, and the Moody Blues, and I must have done the first 12 or 14 British acts.
You know what's amazing, Sid? The fact that the Rolling Stones are still playing as we speak.
They are amazing. They're ageless.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
Look at Elvis Presley's gone, and so is Frank and Judy, and some of the folks you represented. Tony Bennett's still strong at this point, but a lot of these folks, their careers are limited. The Beatles broke up in 1970. It's been 30 years, and they're still as strong as ever, which is amazing with the new.
The Stones seem to have a special glue.
Yeah,
Mark, a very special, cohesive that still keeps them together and still playing occasionally. That is interesting. You're right.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And even the Moody Blues are still playing, but they didn't have as early a start as the Stones did.
The Moody Blues were incredible people. Some young film group was doing a documentary on my career, and they asked the Moody Blues would they film something, and they were just marvelous. I hadn't seen them in 25 years, and what they said on this piece of film for me was so rewarding and pleasant. I got to find them to say hello to them. I don't know their new addresses, although I'd been to their homes just outside of London many years ago.
Is Justin still out there playing?
I'm sorry?
Justin Hayward's still out there playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He and John are still together. Two splendid guys.
We're talking with Sid Bernstein, who has a remarkable story. It's called Not Just the Beatles, and in fact, it can be ordered at notjustthebeatles.com or any Bloomingdale's store. It's a fascinating book and a fascinating guy. I could actually speak with you for like 5 hours and be very happy, but that probably isn't too possible. But it's amazing to me the kind of people you've dealt with. I mean, from Elvis Presley to Frank Sinatra to Judy Garland to Tony Bennett. When you look back at it, it's kind of like you're kind of living a dream, isn't it?
I'm living some new dreams, Mark.
Yeah, who are you working with now, some of the newer acts?
I'm not working, actually, with any specific act, but there's a country artist that I've not done much in country.
Yeah.
Named Steve Warner, whom I happened to see at a club here in Manhattan, Lower Manhattan, who just struck my fancy. So gifted guitarist, gifted musician, wonderful songwriter. The people who are going to be hearing what we said or reading what we said, a lot of them will recognize the name Steve Warner. I'd like to come back to Carnegie Hall. I haven't been there for a while in terms of presentation,
mm-hmm.
and introduce Steve Warner to a New York audience.
Do you
I'm going to be doing, hopefully, Shea Stadium. I'd like to slam another home run, even at this stage of my life.
That's nice.
I want to go back to Shea Stadium with a big one, and I'm working on, I'm not at liberty to say who the act is yet. I'm waiting for an okay to do that at Shea Stadium this summer of this year, 2001. That's one of my dreams. My next dream is to do a huge festival in the city of Liverpool, where I've spent a lot of time recently, made a lot of friends, after being asked to do a speech at a memoriam for Brian Epstein in that city. I believe that's in the book, is it not, Mark?
Yes, it is, actually.
Yeah.
A question for you that isn't in the book. Steve Warner, you just mentioned, is he signed to a record contract anywhere?
I'm sure he's with one of the big labels.
So he has a CD out right now?
I would guess. He lives in Nashville, and I'm sure he's on a major label. But I just saw him once, and I said, damn it, this guy should be a star.
Well, maybe we'll put him on our show.
Putting on your show. He really is.
You had a thrill maybe a year ago or so when you threw out the first ball at the Shea Stadium at the 30th anniversary of the Beatles.
Yeah, that was 5 years ago, actually.
Was that 5 years ago? Wow.
Would you believe it? 95.
That's right, yeah.
One of the directors of Shea Stadium,
wow.
Kevin McCarthy, asked me to come out. He was a real Beatle fan, and he says, I've known your name since I was 3 years old. My father, at that time, was the groundkeeper at Shea Stadium. His father, Mr. McCarthy,
mm-hmm.
was the groundkeeper. When this Kevin McCarthy, who's now one of the directors there, one of the officials, was a three-year-old, he says, I'd love to ask you to come up on the 30th anniversary and before the ball game, throw out the first ball, and I forgot who was playing, but there was a huge crowd there, and they introduced me, and they have this film thing on the scoreboard, and there I was looking at myself. That's technology today. There I was looking at myself speaking to this crowd about the Beatles, a very brief chat, and he asked me to throw out the first ball, which is usually reserved for governors and presidents of countries. My kids were so proud of me. That morning I went to Central Park, and I hadn't thrown a ball since my children were quite little, maybe 20 years or so. And I picked up a rock the size of a ball, a baseball, and started pitching it so I wouldn't be embarrassing when I threw the ball to the catcher. And then I asked the catcher to move in closer. I didn't think I could reach him. And he moved real close so I could almost lop it to him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice experience. It's great for my kids and their friends whom they invited.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. You have 6 children.
Yeah.
How many have followed your musical footsteps?
None. Not at all.
None. Wow.
None at all.
That's interesting.
It's not an easy business, and I didn't encourage it.
Yeah. Now, what do your children do? Anything interesting?
They're an interesting group. Or each one does something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And none of them have gone into music at all in any way.
My youngest, who just came back from 5 years, he was a major at Tufts University in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
His major was Japanese language. And the Japanese chose him to teach English. He's an unusual kid. He just got back from 5 years of teaching
in Japan,
English in Tokyo.
Wow.
And he wants to try his hand at one concert of promotion, so...
There you go. It's in the
not
blood.
Not with my encouragement, by the way.
Well, I think it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a promoter, but you've had so many great times with, the Rascals and the Bay City Rollers and the Beatles and the Stones, and even just looking at the book and some of the photos in here, it looks like a wonderful life. I'm sure there's stress involved and everything else.
It's been exciting.
Yeah.
And the book,
May I tell your listeners where they could get it?
Sure.
On the internet?
Yeah, it's at, I already mentioned it, notjustthebeatles.com.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah. It's also on Amazon now.
Right. And it's also on PMPnetwork.com. We have it in our superstore as well. And people can get it at Bloomingdale stores around the country as well. So
yeah.
It's an inexpensive book, and it also comes with a free 20-minute phone card inside. So you can't lose on the deal.
That's right, you can.
Well, I want to thank you, Sid, for coming on, and I hope you feel better.
Mark,
get a quick
recovery. Why don't we say hello again when I'm back with my cold behind me, and I don't mind speaking to you again soon, again and again, if that's okay with you and your people.
I look forward to our next discussion. Just take care of yourself and get better, okay?
All right, thanks for your time.
All right, take care, Sid.
All the best.
Sid Bernstein. Have a great new year.
You too, my friend, bye-bye. And to all your friends out there, okay?
Thanks.
Bye-bye.